Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu. I'm joined by Vivek. We're doing a quick Game 2 preview. We've both written about how the Raptors need to adjust, so I'll just start with you. What do the Raptors need to do differently in Game 2 to avoid the same fate that they had in Game 1?
I think just making sure that their best talents are out on the court as much as possible.
Who is that?
Kawhi Leonard?
Who? Tell Nick Nurse, please. Let's go down and shoot around and ask Nick Nurse. Hey, Nick, how many minutes are you going to play Kawhi today? And
yeah.
Is it going to be less than 40? Because otherwise...
See, I guess to a greater all-encompassing point is just there needs to be a greater sense of urgency. I felt a theme for the Raptors throughout that game was almost like this feeling of invincibility that they couldn't lose it, and then until they actually did. Mm-hmm. So I think right from the jump, the Raptors have got to come out the hungrier team, the more intense team. And let's face it, they're desperate. You cannot go down 0-2 going to Orlando. And that's the way the Raptors have to approach the game. Now, you know, we've talked about Kawhi playing 33 minutes, but, you know, Danny Green played 34. I think that's another thing that has to be looked at, because when you're looking at the depth that you've lost with OG at the wing, you need to get him more minutes as well, because he's the best shooter on your team. And especially, you know, if Kyle is going to struggle with his shot again, you need Danny Green shooting even more.
Yeah, no, for sure. Look, the quiet minutes thing is, you know, it's like the most... not obvious, but it's like the one that's like most easily implementable.
Yep.
You know, I went back and looked at the tape. Like, first off, there's just some things in terms of execution the Raptors got to do better. Like, you know, they made some errors in terms of just like, you know, rushing out the wrong shooters. Like Danny Green closed out at Jonathan Isaac, and Isaac drives past, things like that. You got to be, you know, just tighter with your game plan. You got to be way tighter on those post-entry passes. That was very frustrating to see the Magic run that stuff back in transition. And just overall, I just feel like, you know, like you said, man, the Raptors got to play with more urgency, in the sense that, like, you know, honestly, given another more strict team, like, let's say Dwayne Casey was coaching this team, right? Just for the sake of argument, because we all know Dwayne, we've seen him here for a long time. If Dwayne Casey was coaching this team, there wouldn't be as many off-ball actions. There wouldn't be as much like, hey, let's, you know, run this thing for Norm and do this and this. No, it's like, no, we're going to have Kawhi Mark play pick and roll together and probably play it like 25, 30 times. And I feel like, honestly, if that's what the Raptors do in this series, especially considering how much they would struggle to guard a middle pick and roll with those two, then they should be fine. They really should be fine. I think they'd be better off doing it, really. Or like Mike D'Antoni, for example, the way he lets Harden cook.
Yeah.
I think that's how the Raptors need to do with Kawhi and Mark, because I think the Magic just don't really have a good solution there. Like, unless they want to switch Vucevic onto Kawhi, which is, I don't think is a good idea.
No.
You know, either that, or they're basically, Gordon and Vucevic are probably both occupied with Gasol, and that, or with Kawhi at that point, you know, Gasol is open. So there's just a couple of really obvious things that I feel like, you know, Nick should just get the team to clean up, because again, the Raptors have more talent, and they kind of played like that in game one, and I don't know, they took a regular season approach.
Yeah, and I think to your point, you're just giving them advantages that they're not accustomed to having. Like, you look at their philosophies, they are not going to cheat and look for steals. They play good, sound, fundamental defense. They're going to pack the paint. And even when they're on offense, they're not going to look to turn over the ball, mm-hmm. right? Those are mm-hmm. sort of basic playoff fundamentals that you try to follow. And then now, when they're not even looking for steals, but you make such poor entry feeds, when you make these lackadaisical turnovers, you're giving them extra points. Like, the Raptors were the most efficient team in transition over the regular season. They finished the game with 15 fast break points, but the Magic finished with 14.
Yeah, and that shouldn't happen.
Finished with 9 steals. Yep. They finished 5th worst in the league in that department. So now you've completely negated that area of the game where you usually excel. So you're just making your life that much more difficult. It's not like, you know, the Magic are sort of imposing their will on you. These are things that you just have to clean up. And, you know, as the 2 seed, as a team with, again, all this experience in your starting lineup, you know, in the story I wrote today, they've got over 300 games of playoff experience in their starting lineup. The Magic have 29. That
wow. Wow.
You know, yeah, on some level, that has to show.
Yeah, exactly. And I think in game one, you know, that focus and intensity wasn't there. You know, one thing that's also been talked to death a little bit is, you know, Kyle Lowry and obviously just him underperforming. So hopefully he doesn't score 0 points in game two. But I did find it a little bit interesting. Like, so it was just, you know, not even just thinking about it critically or anything like that, just thinking about it as, someone that supports the team. Like, when Kyle says, oh, it's, you know, I score the right way, you know, people are focusing too much on the points, you know, I go out there and I do my job, things like this. It's like, to me, it's not the greatest thing to hear. You know what I mean? Like, I would almost rather him take a different approach.
Right. Yeah, no. And we talked about this earlier. Like, just own it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing we keep talking about is how the additions of, you know, Kawhi, who's supposed to be so efficient in the playoffs, and he started out great. You look at what Siakam's able to do scoring-wise. You look at what Gasol yep. brings to the table. All of that is supposed to alleviate the need for Lowry scoring. That doesn't mean that it's non-existent.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you don't have to score 20 anymore. You got to score at least 10.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, yeah. You know, again, I think the degree to which his scoring is required now is so low that it has to be a base expectation. The same way, I mean, honestly, I would prefer if he just said, hey, you know what? Those things that I do, mm-hmm. the assists, the rebounds, the defense, the taking charges, bringing energy, bringing leadership, that is a base expectation.
Yeah.
Scoring 10, 12, 15 a game, that should also be a base expectation.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we were in the studio yesterday, and I remember telling you, it's like if you went to a Subway and you ordered a sub combo, and then they only gave you like a drink and a cookie and like some soup, and that's it. And you're like, where's the sub? You're like, what are you talking about? I gave you a cookie. I gave you a drink. I gave you a, it's like, no, that's not what I came here for. Like, for real, like, that's part of the deal for Kyle is he has to score some, right? And, you know, he missed some open shots. That's not what happened.
Well,
but, like,
actually,
the lack of aggression is kind of concerning to me, because like, he kind of just faded towards the rest of the game. Like, if you look at the passing numbers, it's great that he's an assist man, right? It's great that he led the team with 8 assists. He got 85 touches in game one. He passed it 72 times. That's not enough.
Yeah,
that's just not enough. You gotta like look to create more with that. You can't just always be passing. And you know, one other thing that's actually, I made this thing a little bit, just on a personal level, a little bit annoying for me, is just like, it's almost like you can't talk about Kyle struggling and can't be dissatisfied with it. It's sort of just like, well, what A, his plus minus, B, like, you know, Kyle's done so much for the franchise. And it's like, yeah, all that can be true, but like, at
that
the
never
same
seemed
time,
to apply when DeMar struggled.
Yeah, well, he didn't have the plus 11. He didn't bring plus 11 to the game.
Yeah.
But I mean, it has been like a very sharp in terms of just, you know, we're members of the media too, but like, you know what I mean? Like, there has been a strong pushback from the media of like, oh, Kyle Lowry doesn't actually disappear in the playoffs. And I'm like, it's a bit of a galaxy brain take, man. I watch the games too. All right. I'm there. Like, I see him disappear. That was one of the games. You could just say it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. That's the thing. Just own it. Just move on, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And try to bring it in game two. You know what you bring to the table. Again, those other things that he does, those are the things that you expect to see game in, game out. And honestly, you know, those things maybe stood out a bit more when you were playing with more one-dimensional players. But now, guess what? That's also become a base expectation of guys like Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard and Marc Gasol. And even Serge Ibaka to an extent. You expect those base things of defense and, you know, and rebounding and all those other factors. But the scoring aspect of it, you know, everyone's got to do their part.
Yep, for sure. And look, there is a history of Kyle struggling in game one. The official numbers now for his game one averages. So what, 9 points a game on 26% shooting and 15% from three. Game two, big difference. 18 points a game, 7 assists, 46% shooting, 38% from the field. So game two, Kyle Lowry plays like what he normally plays like.
Right.
Game one, he plays like playoff Kyle.
Yeah.
Right. So hopefully.
Do you buy into any of this rhythm stuff of, you know, that break between the regular season and the playoffs where that time off takes him away from his rhythm?
I feel like are you asking me this because Nick Nurse said I shouldn't have given, like, you know, hindsight's 20/20.
He was asked the question, right? So it was like, he was asking, Nick, like, don't you think you should have played Kyle against Minnesota? And it's like, well, you know, now that I know he scored zero, it's like, yeah, maybe I should have. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if he scores 10 to 12 and you win the game, he's probably no one's saying that.
It did come across a little bit to me that Nurse was trying to take the heat off his point guard. But it was one of those things where it's just like, everyone's trying to take the heat off Kyle. And I get that in terms of supporting sense, but also, like, it's kind of annoying. You know what I mean? Like, no, Nick, I don't think you did anything wrong by resting your player in game 82 for a road game that meant nothing. Like, right. I don't think that was a huge mistake that he should be, you know, now atoning for. And it's like, oh, it's Nick Nurse's fault that Kyle scored zero. No, it's Kyle's fault that he scored zero. Like, and it just is what it is, you know? So,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like, first off, Kyle has this, like, ankle thing, right, apparently, that, you know, after he got rolled over by Mitchell Robinson, you know, when he came back, like, you know, 3-4 days later, he was like, oh, my ankle's not going to be 100% the rest of the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were both at practice right before the playoffs, before game one, and he was saying how, you know, you just got to forget about that stuff. You just got to move on. Doesn't affect me or whatever, right? Which is a classic Kyle answer. You're just going to brush it off. But, like, you know, if he has a bum ankle or whatever, like, I have no issues with benching him for game 82. No one even blinked when he benched, when he just sat there for game 82. So
everyone saw the 65 games and said, yep.
Yeah, listen, you got to put the money in the bank, no matter how much money that is. So, yeah, I mean, look, hopefully Kyle comes back and bounces back. I think there are some adjustments that, you know, we looked at. I think for both of us, I think the most obvious area where Kyle can sort of not force his offense but get easier shots is in that mid-range area. Yeah. Kyle used to be a really good mid-range shooter, and then he stopped shooting it, right? Obviously, so the game sort of, you know, migrated to only layups and threes, and so he did that. But now he can't really go for a layup because he's a little bit, you know, he just can't score around the rim. And the three is a little bit off. So, you know, you kind of have to go back to the mid-range. And I think, especially with the way the Magic are playing him, that shot's open. And I think if he hits a couple of those early on, then maybe that loosens things up for the rest of the game. And he can get, A, into an easier flow, and B, you know, create more opportunities for his teammates.
Yeah, no, I think that's a big key. That does play into the Magic's hands a little bit, but again, making enough of those, then you force the Magic to change something up as well, right? And
I mean, scoring zero plays in their hands. Zero is, is in their hand.
Yeah,
that's their hand right there.
Yeah, and again, you know, looking at the Kyle Lowry of old, every time he got that screen, if there was daylight coming off that screen, it was just pull up, boom. That was it, right? And I think now there's a bit of that hesitation. You know, even early on, there was a play where he got the ball and he was so adamant about finding Gasol and he sort of forced the pass on the roll and Aaron Gordon stole it.
Right.
Just little things like that where, you know, usually you expect him to just make that read. And so I think, you know, if he can, again, we've talked about this all season. When Kawhi Leonard's been out, we've seen sort of the Kyle Lowry that everybody loves and is accustomed to seeing. And we haven't really seen that on a consistent basis when Kawhi has been in the lineup. And so I don't know if it's a realistic expectation to see that happen now. But on some level, he's got to know that, you know, there's certain reads where it's okay for him to be aggressive, where, you know, there's not going to be an issue among the other four guys if he just says, hey, I'm calling my number now.
Yeah, and it's completely normal.
Yeah.
And again, like, a lot of being a playmaker and stuff like that is establishing yourself as a threat and then leveraging that
exactly
into easier opportunities. Another guy who, you know, has kind of skirted criticism, and I don't think he deserved any, but I think there's definitely areas of improvement, is Kawhi, actually. And this is something that Kobe did a really good job of on his latest episode of Detail, which if you haven't seen, I mean, I don't blame you. It's a little bit hard to access this content, but I think it's on ESPN Plus, although you told me today ESPN Insider can get it too.
So basically they've merged ESPN Insider and ESPN Plus. So basically if you have an Insider subscription, you have access to the...
Right.
I don't think the term Insider exists anymore. It's all just ESPN Plus. Okay.
That makes sense. Well, in any case, you know, there are videos out there, and it was like a 16-minute video where Kobe breaks down film. And he looks at it not in terms of the way coaches might look at it. He looks at it in terms of how a player and how specifically a scorer would look at it, right?
Yeah.
And so, he talked about how it's a couple adjustments that Kawhi can make in terms of just – and it's not major stuff. It's like, you know, setting up posts, a little bit deeper towards the baseline. So because the Magic are stunting and helping.
Yeah.
And so if you're deeper in the baseline, then there's a longer distance to cover off. And so it's an easier pass either out to the shooter for him to have more space to shoot, or they might just not help and Kawhi has one-on-one. And there's a lot of couple subtle adjustments. I mean, from the detail piece, which, you know, you watched the video and you broke it down, you sort of explained it. What areas can Kawhi sort of tweak in his game to get better results in game two?
Yeah, I think when you look at the importance of the mid-range against the Magic to sort of break their defense, I think he's pivotal to that because he's so effective in the mid-range. So again, when he gets opportunities to attack the big, he's got to make sure he creates as much separation as possible. So I thought the point about attacking Vucevic, or, you know, even if he's in the game against Ken Burch, I think those opportunities where they're trying to shade him one way, and Kobe talked about that top foot being out.
Right. Especially with Vucevic.
Exactly, yeah. Right. You can attack that, force them to move their feet, and they're probably not going to be able to keep up with you, and then you get probably an easier look at a mid-range too. Now, the other thing we talked about as well is a comfort zone, right? And like, if Vucevic is shading him to go right, Kawhi is probably saying to himself, this is exactly where I want to go.
Right.
And I guess that's another way to sort of really goad them into taking that shot, right? Because when he goes right, he's making 49% of those. When he goes left, he's making 39%.
Yeah.
Right? So it kind of, again, you're playing into the Magic's hands a little bit. But again, you make those shots, it breaks their defense.
And also, it doesn't, even if you just go left, right? Because you're right. Like, they are forcing him to go right. And, you know, it is still hard when, again, like, the big man is, like, overplaying you to go right. And they're taller than you. And so they don't have to close out as much, or they don't stay as close to close out on you, right? But, I mean, even if you just fake left and then you cross back over or something like that, again, if they're unbalanced or whatever, then that's where you can create more space. And I think, you know, that's where one of these things where, again, like, when we watch the tape, obviously we're not as qualified as coaches or players, but, like, you know, we kind of see the results and we sort of say, okay, you make some adjustments. As a player, that's the kind of way you would, and that's why I think the detail thing is so interesting when Kobe does it, is because, like, he really thinks about it in terms of, like, okay, given this opportunity again, how would I do it and how would the defense react? And, seriously, if you get a chance, I think there's actually a link on Reddit, you can hear from me, but there's a link on Reddit if you want to see that. But that was worthwhile. And also, you know, Zach Lowe also wrote about...
Before we move on, one thing I do want to bring up that I was thinking about after I wrote the piece, but I didn't include, was, you know, I feel like part of why the Magic may shade a certain way as well is because of they're so aware of who to help off of.
Yeah.
And so they will usually tend to shade towards, you know, if Siakam's in the right corner, they will probably shade towards the right because they know they can afford to help a bit more off Siakam as opposed to, you know, off of Danny Green.
Right.
So that's another thing that I think they do a good job of in terms of, you know, adjusting to the spacing on the floor and dictating where they want the offense to go.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, that goes to, you know, again, if Kawhi positions himself a little bit better, where he stretches the defense a little bit more, then that, you know, that's where more opportunities can come from. Zach Lowe also chimed in and wrote a couple about his adjustments and stuff like that. So, there's plenty of adjustments that the Raptors can make in game two. I still ultimately come back down to, though, like, what the way I've sort of looked over everything and sort of heard all the thoughts is, like, the one thing the Raptors don't have to adjust too much is defensively, right? It seems like everybody's talking about the Raptors' offensive adjustments. And nobody's really talking about the Raptors' defensive adjustments. I think for the most part, the Raptors are pretty happy with how they defended. Obviously, DJ Augustin going off for 25 is not ideal, but did a great job on Vooch, did a great job on Aaron Gordon, did a great job on Terrence Ross.
And I mean, after the first half, they did a great job on DJ as well, right?
That's true.
Like, essentially, from the beginning of the second half right till the final minute, he just had the 1 point.
Yeah, so, he split a pair of free throws.
Yeah, exactly, right? So again, even that was a good adjustment that Nurse made that you have to give him credit for. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I thought overall the half court defense was great. And again, it just comes down to those sloppy entry feeds, you know, a couple of careless mistakes where you're just fueling their transition game. You know, we saw a bunch of offensive fouls on the part of the Raptors as well. Maybe a couple of them weren't really offensive fouls. But
that MCW charge was a bit suspect. But yeah.
But you know, those are the things that you're in control of fixing, and then you should be able to see even that much more of an improvement on the defensive end.
The one thing I want to wrap up the podcast with is also the Magic aren't just going to play the same game plan, right? Steve Clifford's already talked about how the Magic got to play a better game in terms of just executing things like that. So what kind of adjustments do you see the Magic making in terms of how can they get Vucevic some more open shots and how can they get Fournier a couple of easier looks and stuff like that? Because if I were the Magic, I'm not satisfied with just how they played in game one. I think they know they got a little bit lucky with their 3-point shooting. And that happens. And that could very well happen again, to be honest. But, you know, there's other portions of their game where I feel like, you know, it's not, they didn't play a perfect game plan by any means.
Right. I think if you're looking at Vucevic, they will probably look for opportunities to set him up for the pop.
Yeah. It's surprising how little they did that.
Yeah. And again, that might have been a little bit to do with him getting off to a slow start and then maybe not having the confidence. But I think if you can set up his pop game, then it makes it easier. And you force Gasol to make some decisions where now maybe he's not dropping into the paint as comfortably. So I think that's the one thing. They have to establish his jump shot for him to be effective against Gasol. I think if he's going up against Gasol in the post, that's a matchup the Raptors will take every time. So I think that's the main thing with Vucevic. In terms of other adjustments, frankly, I think they might actually look to be a bit more aggressive now, knowing that, you know, the Raptors made some sloppy mistakes and seeing the difference that the transition game made. I think they will look to be a bit more aggressive on the defensive end, not be as fundamental in terms of, you know, what their game plan is. But I think and then even when they're on the offensive end, we saw them attack the offensive glass more than they usually do. I think that's something that they might even try to do more of. So I think usually you would say that in the half court set, you expect the Raptors to do what they did in game one and maintain that efficiency. But I think the Magic will be ready for that. And so they will understand that they probably need even more on the fast break. And maybe even, you know, if they can get up and down a bit more and, you know, get out to an early run, I think that will silence a lot of the Raptors fans and maybe bring up that nervousness that they can then take advantage of.
Hey, man, listen, it doesn't take a lot for the Raptors fans to get nervous. Right? I wrote about yesterday, the Raptors did a whole season, a whole, not just regular season, but a whole off season of healing, bringing in proven veterans, proven champions, and all that was undone by DJ Augustin hitting 25 points in game one. Yeah, I mean, just to quickly wrap up, I think, look, the Magic, if I were Steve Clifford, I would look to stagger my minutes a little bit so that Vucevic, I know it's sort of, he has a pretty stable rotation and it works pretty well. He has two kind of very clear defined units.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's good for him. But I think he should really consider just moving Vucevic's minutes a little bit so that Vuce is playing a little bit more against Ibaka.
Yeah.
Because I think Vucevic has shown that he can hurt Ibaka down low. Ibaka's just not strong enough to stay with him.
Yep.
And, you know, it's not like their bench was scoring at a great efficient clip. It's really their defense that kept their bench in it. So, you know, if you can get Vucevic a couple more minutes out there, maybe you run like Terrence Ross and Vucevic out there and that's your offense, that might give you a lot better results than what, you know, what you saw in game one. But, you know, I think the Magic are a very well-coached team.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that I don't think they need to adjust is just their mentality. Like, they've been staying locked in. They're focused.
Yep.
And it really shows. It's really impressive. And, like, to me, sometimes when I watch this game, I'm like, when I watch game one, you know, twice, basically, It was, it's like, yeah, the Magic are very, very well coached, and they're very detail oriented, and the Raptors, you know, a little sloppy in the coaching front. I'll say that much.
Yeah, some rookie mistakes
from a rookie coach.
Yeah, so you expect him to learn from it. You expect him to grow from it. And again, I think this Raptors team as a whole is still growing as they go. You know, just, you know, obviously all the talk has been about the postseason and flipping this playoff switch. But I do think that, you know, when your starting center has only played 19 games in the starting role for you, when Kawhi has missed the time that he's missed, when Kyle's missed the time that he's missed, there is still going to be some growing pains as you go through this postseason. Yeah. And you're trying to get through as much of it as you can. And the one final thing I will say, if the Raptors can progress out of this series, maybe progress out of the second round and potentially take on the Milwaukee Bucks, you're seeing a lot of the things that the Milwaukee Bucks will do.
Yeah, and if you think DJ Augustine locked Kyle Lowry to 0 points, I think Eric Bledsoe might hold him to negative 15. I'm serious. Eric Bledsoe is really good this year. All right, so actual last thing before we wrap up the show. Prediction for game 2.
The Raptors win.
How much?
Convincingly. I would say by at least 12 points.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, I think we see Kawhi up in that, you know, 37 to 39 minute range. And I think really set the tone. And I think we do see Siakam's minutes go down a bit, because I think we'll see Kawhi sort of switch over into the four position a bit more. And I think that's, again, an area where, you know, we talked about Kawhi playing the four, those 1-4 pick and rolls. I think that's something that can be really effective when he's at the four. So, yeah, a convincing win.
So he wraps by 8.
All right.
But it's one of those games where, like, Raps are up 4 and then they get fouled twice on the intentional free throws. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's another close game that gets extended a little bit out. So, yeah, I just don't think it's going to be easy to blow out this Magic team. Like, they're too cohesive.
That's fair.
Yeah. And even their bench is pretty tight, whereas the Raptors' bench is trash. Like, seriously, it's crazy. Like, the Raptors' bench is much more talent, but the Magic bench operates much better. And again, that also goes to coaching a little bit. So, hopefully, we're right. You know, Raptors, take game 2. You know, don't hold us to it if we're wrong, but we will be back after the game with a post-game show from the Scotiabank Arenas. While we're waiting for the players to come out and stuff, you and I will probably sneak in somewhere and record another one of these 20-minute pods. But
how would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Please, Raptors, just please go win game 2. All right? So thanks for listening. We'll be back later tonight.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.